One day, Mark tells us, Jesus came to town. She went to see him. Maybe at first, as was her custom, she hovered around the edge of the crowd. But eventually, something awakened inside her and propelled her into the crowd to reach out, to touch Jesus' cloak.
That's the Reverend Dr. Kim Buchanan. And today she brings you a powerful message entitled Healing Faith. I'm Katie Givens-Keim, and this is Day One. Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insights and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Hello, friends. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Katie Givens-Keim, and today on Day One, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Dr. Kimberly Buchanan. She is the pastor of the United Church in Tallahassee, Florida. Before coming to Tallahassee in 2022, Kim served as pastor of First Congregational UCC in Asheville, North Carolina. Kim is known as the singing preacher, composing music and lyrics. She's a native Floridian, and she graduated from Oklahoma Baptist University with a degree in music education. She earned her Master of Divinity at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and then a PhD in preaching and education from Emory University in Atlanta. Well, Kim, it is just such a delight to have you here on Day One. Again, you are a frequent flyer with Day One Ministries for sure over the years. We've had the gift of so many of, not only so many of your sermons, but also we've been able to have a window into your ministry as it's shifted between phases and decades. So where do you find yourself now in 2024?
I am serving United Church in Tallahassee. And in some ways, you know, during the pandemic, I was in Asheville, North Carolina, which was a beautiful place to wait out the pandemic in the mountains. One of the things that I experienced, which many, many people experience, was being away from family. So I started feeling this call to go home. I grew up in Gainesville, which is where the University of Florida is. Go Gators. And our interstate rivals are the FSU Seminoles, which is in Tallahassee. So I, you know, I'm like, God has a sense of humor. But I've got family in Madison County, which is just an hour east of here. Lots of family. And then more family up in Adel, Georgia. And so it's just been a real homecoming. And in addition to being a homecoming, it's just a really good fit with all the craziness I bring to ministry and all the craziness UCT, United Church, brings to ministry. And so we're having a lot of fun here.
And speaking of all that you bring to ministry, I know that music ministry is a part of what you bring as well. Would you just say a bit about that?
The biggest thing is community singing. Pete Seeger believed that we could achieve world peace if we could just learn to sing together. And I believe that. I really believe that. And even if it's not true, wouldn't it be fun to try?
Yes, I love that.
And so our part of our ministry, or we are involved in a ministry called Tally Green Sing, trying to bring people together to sing earth into well-being. So anyway, that's some of what we do.
I love that. And what a time in history and what a geographical place on the map. Florida in 2024 to bring unity and community conversation. That seems like God called you right to that spot.
Well, it's, we're 2.5 miles from the state house. So it does feel like we are called as a community to be active, to live out our faith actively in the public square. And it's just been a really interesting time the last couple of years. This congregation, when it started in 1975, started with a commitment that 50% of all of its resources in terms of service and financial resources would go outside the church into the wider community. And they lived that for a couple of years. And then they called a full-time pastor and realized they couldn't sustain that amount of giving. But that commitment is in this congregation's DNA. And so, you know, Jesus called us not only to be community amongst ourselves, but to be community in the wider community. And one of the things they told me in the interview process that I have found to be true is this is a small church with a large footprint in Tallahassee. And so we do what we can to show up at the Capitol and advocate for folks who need advocacy. And so we do live out our faith in acts of justice.
What happens when a piece of music that you've collaborated on, the creation of, and these community singings or otherwise, what happens when it's sung or heard for the first time? Do you have moments where like music has transcended anything we could preach from the pulpit or teach into the pews?
So with Tally Greensing, we were working with some folks who have been working with the city for a couple of years now on a clean energy plan. And it finally came time that they were voting on the clean energy plan. And we assumed that it would pass. And so you want to catch your city commissioners doing good, right? And so that's what we did. But here's in the public comment before they took the vote, we had 3 minutes. And so one person used her 3 minutes to introduce me. And then I had written a song that kind of laid out the clean energy plan. And I used my 3 minutes to sing the song. And it was amazing. The whole tenor of the room changed. The whole, because it was like, it brought people together. And it was just, it was so much fun. So anyway, those are just a few of the ways.
Now listen for God's word as we hear from the book of Mark, chapter 5, verses 21 through 43.
Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all she had. And she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease."
Now, Reverend Dr. Kimberly Buchanan's sermon entitled Healing Faith.
What must life have been like? 12 years sick, destitute from medical bills, likely excluded from her religious community, perhaps from any community, alone. How much energy must it have taken each morning to lift her fatigued, anemic body, to look for food, to search again for a cure, to wash her clothes, always to wash her clothes. I wonder if she prayed. I wonder if, in her forays into the community, anyone ever noticed her. One day, Mark tells us, Jesus came to town. She went to see him. Maybe at first, as was her custom, she hovered around the edge of the crowd. But eventually, something awakened inside her and propelled her into the crowd to reach out to touch Jesus' cloak. With the touch, finally, came the healing she'd been longing for. Jesus, aware that healing had gone out from him, asked who had been healed. The disciples noted the large number of people around him. What kind of question was that? But maybe Jesus' question wasn't for information. Maybe instead it was an invitation. An invitation to the woman to testify, to witness to her own healing, to her own determination to obtain that healing. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Today's story of the hemorrhaging woman is what some would call the meat of a Markan sandwich. The author of Mark's Gospel is fond of starting to tell one story, interrupting it with a second story, then concluding the first story. The stories are meant to be read together. They inform each other. Today's initial story begins with Jairus, the synagogue leader's plea to Jesus to save his dying daughter. It's on the way to Jairus' house that the hemorrhaging woman approaches Jesus and is healed. As soon as Jesus declares the woman healed, someone comes from Jairus' house to say that his daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any further? They ask. Overhearing the news, Jesus says to Jairus, "Do not fear. Only believe." You can almost hear Jesus add, "Only believe," like the woman we just encountered. On the surface, the focus of the two stories is about faith. The lone woman's faith that propels her into an audacious act, and the synagogue leader's faith that falters. If we look below the surface of things, though, another contrast can be found. The difference between community and isolation. The crowds Mark describes, the throngs that greet Jesus, the friends and family waiting for Jairus when he and Jesus get back to the house. These crowds stand in stark relief with a lone woman, ostracized, excluded, alone. Over the centuries, this woman's story has been told. Many people, perhaps especially other women, have found courage in her gutsy faith. Looking at her actions through the lens of community and isolation, though, the question comes, what if her faith didn't have to be so gutsy? How might the story have gone differently if the woman had had a community of friends and family like Jairus and his daughter had? What if the social and religious systems in place had not excluded her? What if she'd had somebody to help her? What if people had seen her? Though raised in rural Ethiopia, Semish Segaye was proud to have completed the eighth grade, a rarity for girls in her area. At 19, she married and soon became pregnant, an occurrence celebrated by her husband, family, and friends. But when Semish went into labor, no baby emerged. After laboring for 2 days, her neighbors carried her for hours to the nearest road and put the nearly unconscious Semish on a bus. The bus took another 2 days to get to the nearest hospital. By then, the baby was dead. As she recovered from the ordeal back in her village, Samish discovered that she was crippled and leaking urine and feces. Because her obstructed birth had gone on for so many days without proper treatment, she had developed fistulas, openings in her colon and bladder that made it impossible to control her body's elimination systems. Nerve damage had made it difficult for her to walk. Samish's husband and parents raised $10 for a bus to take Samish back to the hospital to repair the fistulas. When the bus arrived, because of the odor, riders refused to let Samish get on. Samish's family took her home. Her husband soon left her. Samish's parents loved their daughter and wanted to help, but even they were unable to abide the odor. They constructed a hut outside their home for Samish. For 2 years, Samish lay in the hut, hoping for death. Unable to use her legs, ostracized from her community, even from her loving family, there seemed little point in living. Finally, her parents sold their only asset, their livestock, and used the $250 to pay for a private car to take Samish to the hospital. At the hospital, Samish was referred to the Fistula Hospital in Addis Ababa. The Fistula Hospital was established in 1974 by married doctors Reg and Catherine Hamlin. Reg died in 1993, but 94-year-old Catherine continues to work at the hospital. When they arrived in Ethiopia, they encountered many women who suffered from fistulas, something they'd rarely seen in their native Australia and New Zealand. Inadequate health care for women with obstructed births had led to the high incidence of fistulas. Even in places where there was adequate care, intense shame often prevented these women and girls from seeking the help they needed. It's estimated that 90% of women with fistulas have contemplated suicide. Of fistula patients, Reg Hamlin once said, "Mourning the stillbirth of their only child, incontinent of urine, ashamed of their offensiveness, often spurned by their husbands, homeless, unemployable except in the fields, they endure. They exist without friends and without hope. They bear their sorrows in silent shame. Their miseries, untreated, are utter, lonely, and lifelong." When Samish arrived at the Fistula Hospital, she was too weak to endure surgery. The hospital staff worked with her through good food, physical therapy, and connection with other fistula patients to strengthen her for the surgery. Eventually, she learned to walk again, had the surgery, and happily has made a full recovery. Because of her despondence at the time she was brought to the hospital, it's doubtful Samish would have had access to the same kind of gutsy faith as the woman in today's story had. Samish's healing came from a family who was devoted to her, to the vision of two doctors who saw the need for a fistula hospital, and to the community of medical staff and other fistula patients at the hospital. It was through the help and love of those around her that Samish regained her will to live. Alone, her faith in her healing faltered. It was the people around her who gave her strength and who helped her to heal, both body and spirit. Jesus praised the lone woman's gutsy faith. He lifted her up as a positive example, even to the leader of the synagogue. All of that is well and good. I do wonder, though, 2,000 years later, if Jesus might also lift up the gutsy faith of communities and countries as we, reach out to those who are isolated. I wonder if Jesus also might praise the audacious faith that removes barriers to good health care for people, especially women. I wonder if communities and countries had more faith, the world's impoverished peoples, especially women, could get by with less. Let us pray. Holy One, we believe in our hearts that you fiercely love all your children. Give us the heart, the will, and yes, the faith to live your fierce love in the world audaciously. Amen.
Our preacher today was the Reverend Dr. Kimberly Buchanan, the pastor of the United Church in Tallahassee, Florida. For a free transcript of her sermon, Healing Faith, you can visit us online at dayone.org. Friends, this month, the Alliance for Christian Media, which produces Day One, is thrilled to announce our new partnership with the Pitts Theology Library at Emory University's Candler School of Theology. It means that in a couple of years, a new, beautiful, publicly accessible website will feature thousands and thousands of sermons from 80 years of Day One and the Protestant Hour broadcasts. And that includes a brand new digital home for Day One. We are beyond grateful to Pitts, to Emory, and to the Lilly Endowment. So much great news, such huge blessings. But friends, it is very important to note that our partnership with Emory and the generous support of the Lilly Endowment for our digital archives do not cover all the day-to-day expenses of producing Day One's weekly broadcasts to radio and podcast. So just as we have for 79 years, Day One depends on faithful listeners like you. We hope you might consider contributing to this ministry financially, or by sharing Day One with your family and friends, or simply by including this Day One ministry in your prayers. Send your donation to Day One, 3535 Peachtree Road Northeast, Suite 520/714, Atlanta, Georgia 30326. Or visit us online at dayone.org/donate. Thank you so much for your support. Next week on Day One, the Reverend Dr. Charles Qualls returns with his sermon entitled Appreciated But Not Always Wanted. You won't want to miss his masterful storytelling and the way he opens the Book of Mark in fresh new ways. Plus, we talk with Charles about the interplay between his sermons and the characters featured in his popular fictional Southern diner, Bubba Doo's. That's next time on Day One. Sermon, Kim, the intertwining of how you bring together the hemorrhaging woman's story and Samisha's story. What struck me most was the shame and the isolation and loneliness due to their conditions. I found myself having a real reaction to the kind of loneliness that's in our world right now. how do you think Christian communities are called, maybe even particularly in 2024 and the kind of isolation that we have now, to be with the Semeshes and the woman who touched Jesus's robes?
I want to talk about this community that I'm part of, United Church. Part of the reason that I really was interested in them at the beginning is because they got themselves through the pandemic largely without pastoral leadership. For a community to be able to do that, I mean, church members every week, they had Zoom church, and every week a church member would offer a sermon or something like a sermon. And they stayed in touch with each other very well and were very intentional about that. Again, there's something in the DNA of this congregation that, you know, we stay connected. And one thing that's ongoing is a card care ministry, which sounds like, you know, way back in the day, handwriting cards and sending them through the snail mail. Like, really? And it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And so the first place to begin, I think, is in our own communities. Yeah. Because sometimes we think all of the pain is outside the community, outside our church community. But if we start listening to people, there's a tremendous amount of pain amongst the people we worship with on Sunday morning. So that's the first step, is really to pay attention to each other. And just see each other and check in with each other. I mean, it's very simple kinds of things.
Yeah. There's can be something overwhelming about other people's loneliness because we need to attend to our own. So as we look at each other in Christian community, yes, we attend to those right next to us and attend even to the loneliness we kind of are carrying around ourselves. No matter how connected and, you know, electronically or in person or however we have people crowding around us in our lives, you know, attending to the deep loneliness we all have.
I think that's key. We at our annual conference meeting last year for the state, two of our members went to a session where the person said that is the great malady in our country right now is loneliness.
Yeah.
And so the question for the church becomes, what do we offer people in their loneliness?
So that letter writing ministry you mentioned, do you think that one of the reasons it makes an impact is because it's not on social media or on a, like, I mean, do you think that there's something to that? I mean, I mean, not to oversimplify it, but
I think, you know, the social media, it's like it's for the immediate response, and you know, it takes time to find a card. It takes time to remember how to handwrite, right. To find a stamp and then to put it in the mailbox. You know, there is something about that time. And this person listened to the prayer concern I voiced in church, and they heard it. And it makes a difference to be seen. To be seen makes a difference.
So Mark's technique of intertwining the stories of Jairus and the hemorrhaging woman is just fascinating. Jairus's story, in a sense, shows that faith falters sometimes in contrast to her incredibly bold faith. What do you think about the fact that they're coming right next to each other and intertwined like that?
Well, this is Mark's MO, right?
Yes.
To put two stories in conversation with each other in these sandwiches. You know, I find these days, I think about everything in terms of community and also about Jesus' invitation to the woman for testimony. And we have an open prayer time in our worship services. And I think that's where much of the healing in our community happens. People telling their stories and the rest of us overhearing them. And I think somehow all of our stories become intertwined as we all, as individuals in a community, become intertwined with the God story. I don't think it's a toggle switch, like these people have community and these don't.
Yes.
It's just the formation of our faith. But the thing about coming to community, coming back to community, is that if I come to church one day and I'm not believing, somebody else is.
Yeah.
And so there's this safety net in community regarding belief, I think, and faith.
Yeah, love that. And in community with the Jairuses and the woman who touched Jesus's robe and the Samishes, I mean, one of the things that's so powerful about, you know, you describing an entire ministry devoted to women who have profoundly embarrassing, really painful, social stigmatizing illnesses and conditions. It was so moving to think about the moment when someone suffering from that would be seen, would like truly be seen, like, what? There's other women who've had this horrible thing happen to them that's so just gross and da, 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 da. Like, I felt like in you describing that moment, I was getting a like Jesus being touched and her feeling healed.
And I think that's one of the things churches can do as well, or congregations can do as well, not just see people who are in pain and maybe offer them assistance, but create spaces where people who have similar kinds of pain can be together, because that's where so much healing comes. It's like, oh, wow, you've been on this road too. So let's walk together. Okay, so I preached this sermon first 6 years ago, and so I've listened to it a couple of times, and I find myself debating with myself now. But one of the questions, and I, you know, the red tent, the idea of the red tent,
yes,
for when women were having their menstrual cycles,
right? And there's that whole book, you know, that's written. I remember it came out like in the
right,
yeah, about 20 years ago, yeah, yeah,
right. So now I'm wondering if this woman had some kind of red tent community. I don't know. I don't know what was going on in the first century and if anything like that existed. I mean, the way Mark tells the story, it sounds like she's utterly isolated. But I do wonder about the other. And if she had a red tent community, are they the ones who were cheering her on? You go, girl. You do it. Wow. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I bet just about everybody can like sit and think of a moment in life that was like so embarrassing, so disconnecting. You know, your ministry has been one of connections, Kim, for sure. Mm-hmm. So how do we do a better job of keeping ourselves open to new connections?
Well, part of it, I think, is just showing up. I'm a strong introvert. When I'm in my role as pastor, I'm extroverted, but I'm at heart a strong introvert. And so the gift of that is I see the introverts when they come to church. And this one woman, you know, she would always come after the service started, and she would sit in the back pew. And one Sunday she got there late and somebody was already sitting there. And so I saw her kind of wander over to the other back pew. But after church, I said, "I'm so sorry somebody took your seat." And she was like,
"Someone saw me? Oh.
Someone saw me? The pastor saw me?
I've been seen." But,
yeah. You know, and talking with her, that was hard. That was really hard, just showing up. And a lot of times that's what it takes. Just showing up. If you have to come late and leave early, do that. Be brave in the small things, the small steps. You know, it's not like you're totally isolated and then let me jump into everything in church. Just take your time.
Yep. Kim, as you think about this sermon, this passage, and if you think about the public square and sharing this word with a wider audience, what's one thing you hope people will take from your sermon today?
The power of community. I mean, her act was the gutsy act of an individual, but the last line of the sermon, if faith communities had more faith and more commitment to the community part of the faith community, maybe she wouldn't have needed so much. And I think that's why we make our witness in the public square, to be that community in the wider community, so that people aren't trying to do it all on their own.
Yep. not trying to learn everything on their own, do their entire spiritual journey on their own, just people, getting people along the journey. Yeah, that's so important.
Absolutely. Okay, can I just do a PS? Oh, I'm sorry.
Please do. Go.
Okay, I just want to do a PS.
Yes.
And this is about community music.
Mm-hmm.
I also play Irish whistle. And
you do not.
And I do. I do. I love community singing. We have a song circle at our church that meets every week. And we just go around the circle and people call songs and we sing them. And it's just wonderful. But the Irish music scene, I absolutely adore because you come and it takes forever to learn all the tunes, and you'll never learn all the tunes because there are like 1,000,003 of them. But, you know, somebody calls a tune and you all know it and you play together and it doesn't have to be polished. We just come together and we play these tunes. And so I think community music illustrates what I'm talking about with community. We just all come in and sing our song.
I love that. I love that. And I know I feel more gutsy. I feel like I got an extra load of gutsy when it comes to finding new places to reach out where I know there's loneliness and isolation, especially with the extra embarrassing, socially isolating maladies too. You know, that's I think that's such a special ministry and something so particular that the Christian community can come around. And Kim, you have brought the world and continue to bring the world such a connective ministry, and we thank you for it, and we thank you for the community singing. So thank you so much for being on Day One, and I can't wait till next time.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.